Welcome to Geek on Film with your host, Robbie Holmes. Welcome to episode 13 of Geek on Film. I'm Robbie. This week, our main review is going to be of Civil War, but I also had a pretty good block of films that I was able to tick through since my last episode. So it's always interesting. I use Letterboxd pretty religiously. I'm Robbie the Geek there. I often will go to my watch list. Sometimes I'll just shuffle them randomly, or other times I'll sort by time if I have a limited amount of time. So I got to do a bunch of that this episode, which I think really was fun to do and tick off some movies I wasn't super familiar with. And sometimes I don't even remember how they end up on my watch list. But we'll start off this week with Thirst Street. Our friends at IMDb have the summary of this as Gina, an American flight attendant, falls for a Parisian bartender on a layover, only to find herself tangled in a web of deception, delusion, and unrequited amour fou. The cast is, Gina is played by Lindsay Burdidge, and she falls for Jerome, who is a bartender in a sort of strip club, burlesque club. And he's played by Damien Bornand. And the third person that we really should focus on is probably Clemence, played by Esther Gorell, who is Jerome's seemingly on-again, off-again girlfriend. This movie is written and directed by Nathan Silver and co-written by C. Mason Wells. This movie is, the reason I think I ended up picking this movie up and putting it on my watch list is because this year at Sundance, I saw a film called Between the Temples, and it was a Nathan Silver film, and it was uncomfortable and a little strange. So I decided I wanted to try something else from him. Well, this didn't at all disappoint. My review of this on Letterboxd was like, this movie is a total cringe fest. I paused it like four times and I almost tapped out. But the final line of my review is the acting is impressive. And I think that's really true. Lindsay Burdidge is playing Gina, this sort of woman who is in what she thinks is a good marriage at the beginning of the movie, and then finds out that her husband doesn't agree. And, things go sort of haywire and wonky from that point forward. And on a layover in Paris, she and her girlfriends, the other flight attendants on the film, go to this club. And she is just desperate to find someone who she can focus on. And yeah, it really spirals from there. It's a really uncomfortable film. I didn't like it, but I think if you are interested in uncomfortable films and you're open to that, this film is probably worth the time just because of the acting that's in it. So I'll leave that guy there and we'll move on to the next film. So next up for me is one of the Spark shorts over on Disney Plus called Self. The summary on this is a wooden puppet who desperately wants to fit in makes an ill-fated wish upon a star, sparking a journey of self-discovery. And the voice of Self is Sarit Hulouf, who also wrote and directed this. It's a really interesting short. It's hard to say more than interesting. The animation is amazing. The themes were both, I think, a little too heavy-handed and not enough time was spent. Because it's a short for us as the viewers to get an understanding of where I think the writer would like us to end with this. You know, it's visually stunning. And I think if this was given a feature length film, it would be a little bit more, able to land the plane of where I think the writer and director wishes we would understand from it. So you should watch it. It's on Disney Plus. The first film, Thirst Street, is actually on Amazon Prime right now. The other, so again, sometimes sort by length, this one is called 27. It's a short, an 11-minute short, and I watched it on Mubi. IMDb has the summary of it as Alice lives with her parents at her parents' place at the age of 27 with no private life or a relationship. It takes a bicycle accident and a short coma to make her realize it's time to move out. It is written and directed by Flora Anna Buda. And the voice of Alice, who is the main character, is Natasha Stork. And Danny is played by Adam Fiquette. And there's a few other voices here, but overall, those are the main characters we spend most of the time with. I think this was really visually interesting, but it was little more than a mood than a narrative. There's obviously this idea that Alice is still living at home at 27 and does a bunch of drugs and drinking and eventually ends up in a bike accident and ends up in a coma. But I think this is one that was more mood than narrative. And I think it's interesting visually, but I don't think I would say it was one of my favorite shorts. Okay, next up for me is a film I've heard a lot about and finally got around to with William Friedkin passing away in the last year. I feel like all of his films have been getting revisited, and this is one that I had heard about and really decided I wanted to watch. For me, the next one up is the 1977 film Sorcerer. IMDb has the summary as four unfortunate men from different parts of the globe agree to risk their lives transporting gallons of nitroglycerin across the dangerous Latin American jungle. This movie is helmed by Roy Scheider, Bruno Cremera, it doesn't really matter what these guys' names are, Francisco Rabal, Amido, and I think Peter Capel is the sort of last person who ends up with the trio or the foursome. Yeah, this movie is unbelievable. I never even gave it a star rating. My summary of it was, wow, this movie is amazing and so nerve-wracking. This movie feels like a grandparent of movies like Uncut Gems. It's so tense. There's so much going on of trying to have these boxes of dynamite that have been in the jungle for a very long time that are now sweating out nitroglycerin moved across the 28 miles or something like that. Across the, I forget what it is. There's a specific number, maybe 218. It's written on somebody's chalk on the actual dashboard. And that is one of the longest, most amazing drives. But leading up to this, we meet each of the four main characters in a different place. And they're all sort of bad or people who do things that are anti society. So one is a finance guy who seems to have ripped off huge amounts of money. There's another who's a thief who ends up being one of the only survivors of a crash. So there's all these different characters that we meet up with, and they all end up in this one town in South America. And it is chaotic. It is one of the most uncomfortable hour and 40 minutes, hour 50 minutes of my life. But I'm sorry, 2 hours and 1 minute. But I can say definitively, it's a fantastic film. I think there's a lot of history and mystery around this film and all the crazy things that happened when they were trying to shoot it. But I think in the end, Friedkin created something that is extremely tense and constantly, you know, the ongoing joke of like, you paid for the whole seat, but you only sit on the front or the edge. This is one of those films. It's kind of one of the films that probably started people thinking or talking about those types of films. You should check it out. It's currently on Criterion Channel. Next up was a rewatch of Zone of Interest. It was a film that my wife had never seen, and I had gotten to see it early on my own when it first came out to theaters. And it's still an unbelievably powerful film. On a rewatch, it's still a 4-star film for me. If you haven't seen it, I think it's important. I think you should see it. I think its use of sound is one of the most dynamic aspects of last year's filmmaking. And I think the fact that it won the Oscar for sound is really huge and should be a reason alone to watch this movie. You should check it out. Let's see. We're going to move on to Strange Way of Life. This is over on Netflix. It's a short created by Pedro Almodovar and written by him and directed by him. And it's a short with, so our friends at IMDb have the summary as, after 25 years, Silva rides a horse across the desert to visit his friend, Sheriff Jake. They celebrate the meeting, but the next morning, Jake tells him that the reason for his trip is not to go down memory lane of their friendship. So the two main actors of this movie are Pedro Pascal, who is playing Silva, and Ethan Hawke, who's playing Jake. And there's a few other people in this movie. You've got Pedro Casablanc playing the carpenter, Manu Rios playing the singer. It's truly impressive, but I also think it is a little mismatch in tone. So my review of it over on Letterboxd was shot well, great actors, but felt a little slight. There's a mismatch in tones. There's a soap opera feel to the story. Pedro's performance in Ethan is a more serious Western. So Pedro's pretty, feeling like it's soap opera-y, and Ethan is really sticking to what feels like a more serious Western. And there's just a mismatch of tones, but it also just feels like it's two different movies slammed together. And most of the film is the two of them in the same room, and it's truly well shot. But I just think the decision to have this film have multiple sensibilities in the same frame just feels incongruous and didn't work for me. This is on Netflix. You should give it a try. Next up is another short that I had never seen called La Jetée. La Jetée is over on Criterion Channel, and our friends at IMDb have it as the story of a man forced to explore his memories in the wake of World War III's devastation through still images. It's written and directed by Chris Marker. And the main actor, the main people we see are Etan Becker, with no actual character name. I think he's just the man. Gene Negroni is the narrator. And Helene Chantilly is the woman. Davos Henich is the man. And there's an experimenter, Jacques Ledoux, and a few other people. So my review is really interesting because I was writing it as I was watching it. It's only a 27 or 28 minute film, a film of still images with a narrator. It's not what I expected. It's a little slow and seems like there was a way to tell this to do this film almost the same and make it feel a bit more propulsive. It felt a little slow in the middle for sure. And then at the very end, it was like, aha, I know why this is on my watch list. LOL, Pass Robbie left. This is a precursor to a film that I've always loved. So I will not reveal what film this inspires. But if you are a fan of sci-fi movies, especially from the last 30 years, you should probably take the 27 minutes to watch this film. I gave it 3.5 stars. I was impressed with it, even though it was not the exact thing I expected it to be. Again, over on Criterion. The last one was a first-time watch for me, which is pretty impressive because I love all of their films, I feel like, and I don't know how this ended up being something I never saw. For me, it was Blood Simple. The summary over on IMDb is the owner of a seedy small-town Texas bar discovers that one of his employees is having an affair with his wife. A chaotic chain of misunderstandings, lies, and mischief ensues after he devises a plot to have them murdered. This movie is written and directed by Joel and Ethan Coen, the Coen brothers. The main acting in this film is, Frances McDormand is in it as Abby, and her boyfriend and the bar owner is played by Dan Hadley, who's Julian Marty, and there's a private detective played by M. Emmett Walsh, and then the Lothario that steals Abby away is John Getz, who plays Ray. This is one of those films that is so early in the Coen brothers' filmography that you can see how fully formed their idea of filmmaking was, even when they made this first film. Back in 1984, you can see the influences of the Sam Raimis of the world. It's amazing how intense and enchanting Frances McDormand is at times. M. Emmett Walsh plays such a a ridiculously caricaturesque Southern private detective. And it's so much, it's hard to say this movie is fun. This movie is intense and really well done. I gave it 4 solid stars. It's currently on Max. You should check it out before it disappears. It's also on the Criterion channel. That's it for everything but the main review. So we'll jump right over to Civil War. Civil War, according to our friends at IMDb, is a journey across the dystopian future of America following a team of military-embedded journalists as they race against time to reach DC before rebel factions descend upon the White House. Written and directed by Alex Garland. The cast of this film is Kirsten Dunst at the top as the like longtime photojournalist. And then Wagner Moura is playing Joel, who is a journalist who's apparently been in a lot of hot zones with Lee. And then they meet up with Kaylee Spaney, who's playing Jesse, who's an aspiring photojournalist who knows who Lee is right out of the box. And we're dropped into the world of a dystopian future version of America, where there is a president being played by Nick Offerman, who is in his third term and has stopped talking to journalists. And there's a faction of the U.S. that is in the middle of a civil war with what we currently have as America. And they're considered the California-Texas Alliance. And it is not the film I think everybody expected going in. This movie does not lay out a A to B to C as to how we got here, which I think is what everybody expected. And I think the movie we got was much more about how much journalism and journalists are important to keeping civil society alive. I think it's a really interesting take. I am a huge fan of Alex Garland. We'll talk about it probably more next week. I finally watched Men for the first time, and I feel like that movie is the only one of his films I have not been head over heels for. But I really think this film does exactly what he set out to do. And I also have listened to a ton of interviews with Alex Garland talking about this film. And I think it's a really interesting take on what he feels like is important about how society should be open, transparent, and journalism is a big part of that. And the ability to have discourse is falling apart and leaving us. And I think that he feels like journalists need to be protected and they need to continue to do the role of sort of honest broker of what's going on in the world. And I don't know that I disagree. I just think it's not the movie that I think that the trailer sold us a little bit. So I think a lot of people went in and were disappointed. I think it's a movie that I really look forward to watching again now that I know the movie that it is. I think I'll be able to settle into it a lot easier. I didn't know what to expect. This is a movie my wife was really looking forward to. So Amy and I got to see it together. I really think this movie is going to be one of those things that we think about and talk about for a long time in the discourse of how things could break down further than where they are today. And it's just a really amazing character piece of a couple of people in this dystopian civil war that's happening who are in between the troops on both sides, embedded with one side. So there obviously is a bias from the perspective because they get to be with one of the armies. So a lot of the shots that are being taken, the photos that are being taken have the bent of the army that they're embedded with. But their thesis statement, there's this great moment where they're sitting before in a quiet time where Lee, Kirsten Dunst's character, says out loud that every time I was in a war zone and I was sending back pictures, I was hopeful that this would be a warning not to let this happen back at home and that they didn't heed those warnings. And I think that's sort of the thesis statement for the whole movie. I really liked it. I don't know that it was what I expected for sure, but I think there's great individual performances. I think Kirsten Dunst is phenomenal. I think Wagner Moura is really good. I think Kaylee Spaney has the ability to play wide-eyed and intense and can go from aw shucks to sort of growing up and growing into the role she's taking on. I was really impressed with her. I think, you know, this movie, it really, it allowed all these actors to really shine. And I think, you know, the one that everybody talks about is the, there's a scene in the trailer where Jesse Plemons's soldier asks very pointedly, what kind of American are you? And I think that, from what I understand, was a last minute, the person, the actor who was playing that fell out, and they were able to get Jesse to come and play that role. And I think it is one of the most, you know, haunting and intense scenes in the whole film. And I'm so glad that we got a chance to see this film. I think it's interesting, people's reactions to it. And I think everybody should go in with an open mind, and they should try to see it in a place that has really good sound. I think that's the important aspect for me here. Sound made a big, big difference, and I think it will for anybody who sees it. So if you're going to watch it at home eventually, you may want to think about putting on headphones, so at least you get the surround sound effect. That's it for me this week. I look forward to chatting. Feel free to drop me a note at Robbie@geekonfilm.com. Find me on Twitter or Instagram, Letterboxd, and I look forward to figuring out what I'm going to be podcasting about next. There's a lot of moving parts, but I think Fall Guy is probably pretty close to next up. It also depends on how things go with Nova Fest this week for me. Have a great week. Talk to you soon. Bye-bye. This has been a Geek on Film podcast. Thanks for joining us. See you next time.